Welcome on into the Ira Kaufman podcast, the Buccaneers podcast you just don't want to miss. And of course, here with Ira Kaufman, who will be hitting on various NFL topics through the offseason. And we're not going anywhere, Ira. 2 days a week, your podcast, Tuesday and Thursday. We're going all the way through.
There's no such thing as a Buck off season, Steve. You know that.
There's no time to sleep at JoeBucksFan.com. I'm Steve Isbitz, here with Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com. And of course, Ira, it is Hall of Fame time of year, where the 15 finalists were announced yesterday, and that's when it gets serious, because the finalists is when the guys actually presented, when you guys all sit in the room and pick a Hall of Famer, pick the Hall of Famers. So for the folks who aren't 100% set on the process, just the very basics of the 15 finalists, Ira, how many make it, and How long are the presentation process and the vote that all goes down in one day? You can tell us about that real quick.
The whole thing comes down on the day before the Super Bowl, in the Super Bowl site. So I will be in Houston. I believe Mr. DeCamper will also be in Houston. I will enter that room at 7 a.m. to see Peter King online for a bagel and a schmear and a little coffee. And there's normally 46 voters, and this year there's 48, guys, because for the first time, two former players are going to have a vote, Dan Fouts and James Lofton. They were in the room last year as observers. This year, they are actually going to have a vote. We started with a preliminary list of 94. We cut it down to 25 semifinalists and now 15 finalists. Steve, there's a maximum of five modern-day candidates that can get into any one class. That's 5 out of 15. That means two-thirds of the people on this list are going to go home disappointed from that day. People have to understand that.
All right, and Ira, then we have the two contributors, right? Jerry Jones, Paul
Tagliabue.
How many of them
voted
get
on separately.
They get separately.
And as does the senior candidate, Kenny Easley.
To get in, they got to get 75% of the vote.
I think it's 80%.
80%. And for the players, what percent do they got to get?
At the end, when it gets down to a final five, they get a vote, up and down vote, yes or no. It's got to be 80%.
All right. So
once you get to the final five, Steve, I think basically you're in, because I don't think at that point they're gonna circumvent somebody from getting in, because you can't substitute anybody at that point. You can't substitute. So if you say no, you know, to Kurt Warner, what you're saying is I don't believe Kurt Warner ever belongs in the Hall of Fame, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Understood. All right. So what I'm going to do now, Ira, I'm going to just rip down the list of player finalists. Then I want your take. Then I want Lee's take.
By the way, your boy Steve Dumick, the big dog, has already weighed in over here at DeCamper. I get a text from him last night, shortly after the release of the finalists, saying, you've got one job, Kaufman, one job. And I answered back, no pressure, Steve, no pressure. But you know what? I'm already feeling the pressure, and we're a month away.
You should be, and that's what we're going to dive into today. All right, your podcast is presented by Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa, presenting all the Ira Kaufman work at JoeBucksFan.com, along with Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon, and that's where you want to start.
That's a Hall of Fame sponsor, Steven.
Hall of Fame, big-time sponsorship. Presenters of all your work, exclusive presenters. You want to start your car shopping search at EdMooresCadillacTampa.com and EdMooresCadillacBrandon.com. All the fantastic January deals are rolling out as this podcast is hitting the streets on Thursday morning. And definitely go to EdMooresCadillacBrandon.com and EdMooresCadillacTampa.com. All right, Ira and Lee, prepare yourselves here. Here we go. Brian Dawkins, safety. Jason Taylor, defensive end. LaDainian Tomlinson, running back. Don Coryell, coach. Yeah. How about that? How about that background noise, Ira?
Hey, you mentioned Don Coryell, my brain freaks out.
Kurt Warner, quarterback. Terrell Davis, running back. Isaac Bruce, wide receiver. Terrell Owens, wide receiver. Tony Boselli, offensive tackle. Alan Fanica, guard. Joe Jacoby, one of the old hogs from the Redskins' glory days of the late last century. Offensive tackle. Ty Law, cornerback. John Lynch, safety. And Kevin Mawai, center. Ira, handicap the field here for us. What are we looking at? Your first gut instinct last night.
My first instinct tells me this, and I say this knowing what kind of pressure this is going to put on me, Lee. This is the year Lynch has to get in. This is the year. I already peek ahead to 2018. I see Ray Lewis. I see Brian Urlacher. I see Randy Moss. That's a loaded first-year eligibility class. This is not. this is a year where LaDainian Tomlinson is the headliner of the first-time eligibles. And I have every reason to think LaDainian Tomlinson's going to get in, and I'm going to vote for him. He was that good. Now, is he Joe Montana, Dick Butkus, Barry Sanders? No. But he was a fantastic player, and he deserves to get into the Hall. But, Steve, after that, there's five spots total, in my opinion, because every year, you know, they say you could do it up to five. Well, there's such a backlog that every year, Lee, there's going to be five guys. No, there's not going to be a year where three guys get in. It's going to be five, five, five. That's just the way it is. And that leaves four spots. And this is John Lynch's fourth time around as a finalist. There is a queue, whether people want to acknowledge it or not. There's a queue. You can't jump the queue. If you're Brett Favre, you jump the queue. Brett Favre, he's in, like last year. Brian Dawkins, I don't think, is in that category. Some people are worried about Dawkins. He's got better stats than John Lynch. He plays the same position. He was a great player for the Eagles. They used him in a variety of roles. I don't think he jumps ahead of John Lynch. I just don't think so. Some people think Dawkins was a better player than Lynch. I'm going to make the case he was not. So, Steve, very, you know, short summation, there's four spots open. I think Kurt Warner has a good chance. That's two. And I think that leaves three spots, and my job is to get John Lynch into one of those spots. And, guys, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen.
There's two guys on that list that depresses me, that they actually got that far. One of them I predicted, unfortunately, indirectly thanks to you, Kaufman, and this is for another podcast. When Tony Dungy got in, I predicted somebody's going to try to squeeze Don Coryell in there. Sure enough, look what happened. Don Coryell, and Ira, you saw Don Coryell. I saw Don Coryell. There's no way in hell. Dungy's a more a Hall of Famer than Don Coryell.
He made the final 10 last year, guys. Now, Lee, here's the point I'm going to make about Coryell. And I think I'm right about this. Steve, if Coryell was listed as a contributor, I would be much more inclined to vote for him. But he's in the category of coach, and as Lee points out, you judge him strictly as a coach on his resume, he's short. Lee, he doesn't make it.
Big time. And to be honest with you, I don't know how much of a contributor he was than his mentor, and I could picture the
Sid
guy.
Sid Gilman. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, did he do anything different than Sid Gilman?
It's hard to separate Coryell and Sid Gilman.
They're one and the same, and at least Sid Gilman won.
But he did have Eric Coryell. He did have that.
And what did they do in the playoffs? And by the way, to his credit, and I'm giving Coryell some credit here, to his credit, the only time the St. Louis Cardinals were any decent was when he was coach. Yes. And what did they do when they got to the playoffs? Gag,
well,
man.
They were facing the Dallas Cowboys or whatever with Staubach.
Well, Minnesota,
they
played
difficult.
They played Minnesota once, and the second time they played the Rams, and both times they just got destroyed, absolutely destroyed.
Who's the other guy that doesn't belong on that ballot, Lee? You said there were two guys that jumped out at you.
The ultimate cancer, Terrell Owens. Ultimate cancer. I mean, that guy just destroyed teams he was on because he was such an absolute cancer, such a disruptive force in the locker room, such a disruptive force on the field. How he whined and cried and chewed out coaches. And he was a coach killer. No. This guy was the fantasy football people love him, but the real football people know better. And so there was those two guys, to me, it's depressing they even got that far. Terrell Owens, he shouldn't even be Hall of Fame, more like the Hall of Crap.
All right, to recap for our younger listeners, Don Coryell, head coach St. Louis Cardinals 1973 to 77, and then his big fame with the San Diego Chargers, and people alleging and you know, legitimately revolutionized a lot of offensive
his
play.
His defenses were horrible.
1978 to 1986 with Dan Fouts as his quarterback primarily.
Real quick,
sure.
Whenever Coryell, and like I say, I grew up near St. Louis, so I watched a lot of his games. Whenever he went up against George Allen, I love George Allen. I didn't think he should belong in the Hall of Fame. To me, I'm a Chris Russo kind of guy. You got to win a championship. How can you be a Hall of Famer if you can't win a championship? And I want to emphasize, I love George Allen. George Allen coached rings around Coryell. I mean, absolutely coached rings around Coryell.
I get you.
And when Coryell was coaching, by the way, he was the third best coach in his division. Now, think about this. If you're the third best coach in your division, how can you be a Hall of Famer? George Allen and Tom Landry are light years ahead of him. He did a great job with the passing offense in St. Louis. He had a historic passing offense in San Diego. But you know what, gentlemen? Football's more than one-sided.
Lee bringing the juice on the Ira Kaufman podcast.
Speaking about Terrell Owens, I want to throw one thing.
All right. No rush. And I want to dig a little deeper on this list to you, Ira.
Steve, I got to respect the bylaws of the committee, which is don't give any specifics about what happens in that room. And you guys understand that. You got to be able to speak freely.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say we spent 50 minutes, 5-0, on Terrell Owens last year out of an 8-hour meeting. He was by far the most discussed candidate.
Mm.
And the guys that did their research on Owens said very strongly that the people they talked to, which are his former head coaches and former teammates at various stops, said he was a very divisive figure. Now, fans rightly point out that Owens' stats are Hall of Fame worthy, and nobody could argue with that. Nobody. I think he scored 160
touchdowns. Yeah, tremendous stat guy.
That's why he's there.
But unlike Warren Sapp, Steve, where you're supposed to consider only what the guy did on the field, I think being a teammate counts, Steve. And nobody said Sapp wasn't a good teammate. They said Sapp was lousy with the media and didn't want to sign autographs and would berate a father with the 5-year-old kid. That's different. That's different. Nobody said Sapp was a lousy teammate. In fact, Sapp was a good teammate. Keyshawn Johnson, on the other hand, if he ever gets in the room, that might come up. He's a distraction. Sapp was not. So Owens is a different case, but I think teammate counts as far as what you evaluate.
Well, you could argue with a valid argument. On the field, he was derisive. How many times do you see him chewing out his quarterbacks? How many times do you see him chewing out his coaches on the field? So, that guy was an
absolute. That doesn't mean he's not going to get in this year, Steve. He might get in.
Oh, I don't feel super strongly either way. I mean, I don't have a passionate feeling about Owens. But I got to ask you this, Ira. When that list came out, the list we just went down last night, who did you feel just didn't belong here? Who struck you out as, gosh, I don't really see this?
Well, the guy that keeps coming back year after year, and I don't think he's got much of a chance, Morton Anderson. He holds a lot of records, career records. Well, he played 25 years, Steve. If you wrote for Joe Bucksman for 25 years, you'd get some kind of a ribbon. Not much of a ribbon, but something.
Lee, more like a noose.
Guys, there's only one kicker in the hall, one pure kicker, and that's Jan Stenerud, who, by the way, missed one of the biggest kicks in Chiefs history, much to my displeasure. In the Christmas Day game. But, Steve, there's been better kickers than Morton Anderson.
Well,
in his wake, and he's not going to get in. He's just not going to get in.
Well, on that note, Ira, do you think the fact that Roberto Aguayo has fans hitting themselves in the head with hammers and people across the NFL just mind-numbed by his ineptitude, does that help Morton Anderson?
You've got Aguayo in the same sentence as a potential Hall of Fame.
I'm asking you if his free fall helps Morton Anderson. That's what I'm asking.
Apples and oranges,
I'm
my
teasing
friend.
You.
Aguayo's got to worry about keeping his job next training camp.
I'm teasing you. So now, Alan Faneca, Joe Jacoby, Kevin Mawai.
I don't like the way you're saying those names, Isbits. You're saying them like they're chopped liver.
No.
I've been doing this since 2005. Faneca's
a fantastic player, played forever, and I don't dispute that.
And he blocked for Jerome Bettis, and they had a heck of a running game.
Jacoby was downright good.
Mawai was a top-notch center. I think he made 8 All-Pro teams. I'm not talking about Pro Bowls. 8 All-Pro teams.
Wow.
That's hard to beat. Steve, what has struck me year after year, since doing this in 2005, taking over for the late, great Tom McEwen, and I got McEwen to thank me for having this post, because he recommended me when he was no longer traveling to the Super Bowl. And a lot of other guys want this position, and I got it, and I'm not giving it up. And thanks to Joe Bucks fan, I don't have to give it up. So I will be in Houston. And, Steve, I've got a nice little track record going. But Lynch is the guy that's standing out right here. It's the fourth time, fourth different speech. And believe me, this will be a different presentation. You can't hit these guys over the same head. And this year, look, guys, his numbers aren't going
to
change.
To clarify, what you mean by that is Lynch has been a finalist. So if you go in to present the same way you did last year and the year before, right? He's been a finalist
Absolutely.
Twice.
No, three times. This is his fourth time.
As a finalist. So then basically you're presenting Ira's got his record out there, broken record.
Yeah, I'm not going to do the greatest hits of John Lynch. And Lynch's candidacy doesn't rest with numbers. He doesn't rest with numbers. Now, Rondé Barber, who comes in at 2018 as a first-time eligible, will be much more stat-based presentation than John Lynch. So, Steve, just to give our listeners a little taste of what's going to happen in that room in Houston, My main thrust, and I think it's the right one, is that Lynch was the third integral piece of an iconic defense. Nobody can argue that that Buck defense wasn't superior for a long period of time. We're not talking about the 85 Bears. We're not talking about the 2000 Ravens. We're talking about a defense that from 97 to maybe 2003, Steve, was top 10, top 5. And Lynch played a big, big role in that. And two guys were already in. And John Lynch is the third guy, and he deserves to be in.
Kevin Mawai's Jet center. Do you think, Ira, do you think, Lee, do you think he's there in a lot of reasons? Now, we go to voting all pro and pro bowls. You know, a lot of that's subjective kind of stuff, yes. as we know. Do you think Mawai's there if he doesn't play for the Jets, if he's a pro bowl center for the Chargers?
I'm not going with you on that, nope. Isbits. Now, right. You love to disagree with me, so I got to slap you around a little bit. I think if he was for the Indianapolis Colts, he'd still be in that room. Now, that doesn't mean I think he's getting in the first year. I don't think he's getting in this year, nor is Tony Boselli this
year. Yeah, what's
year.
With Boselli? He's a guy played, what, 7 years?
Yeah, yeah. Same argument as Terrell Davis, Lee. Short career, but a very an impactful player. Pete Prisco, your buddy, is a big Boselli guy.
Oh, Boselli was
saw him play. He was very, very good, Steve, but he didn't do it for very long.
He didn't do it for very long because he had injuries. But when he played, he was, no question, the best left tackle there was in the game when he played. I mean, it was head and shoulders. I mean, this guy was one of the best left tackles ever played. This guy was Anthony Munoz kind of guy. That guy, to me, is a no-brainer. I'm not a Pete Prisco guy, but I'm all behind him on this.
Terrell Davis is gaining ground. He's gaining some steam. Steve, he might get in this year.
Well, if Boselli played 8 years, right? He played 8 years, one of them injured, so we'll say seven strong years, which is a short career. Didn't play in a Super Bowl.
It's less than 100 games.
Didn't play on much of a team. You know, he had some good years, but is that enough to put a guy in first
yes.
ballot?
First Gale, ballot? Gale Sayers never played in a playoff game, had a short career.
You know, DeKemper mentions Gale Sayers, and it's come up in the room, Steve, on Terrell Davis.
Who won two Super Bowls.
He did, and put the Broncos over the top with a Hall of Fame quarterback.
And one of the best, Davis also one of the best postseason performers
postseason
in history.
He was. Boselli,
I mean, Roger Worley never won a playoff game. He's in the Hall of
right.
Fame.
Sure.
Larry Wilson.
You hear the Gale Sayers argument with Terrell Davis. I've heard it in the room. Maybe I'm being off base here. He's not Gale Sayers. He's not Gale Sayers. Nobody had ever seen anybody like Gale Sayers.
Is he Roger Worley?
In 1965 when he came. Well, Roger Worley had a long, distinguished career.
1965.
Long career.
Wasn't
he wasn't dying.
1965.
That was your 40th birthday party, wasn't it?
when I was in my 20th year of covering the NFL, Steve. I'm not buying the Gale Sayers argument. Now, you make a great point about Davis. One of the great postseason runners. But I'll say this. After he retired, the Broncos kept bringing in running backs, and they were all getting 1,200 yards. Now they weren't Terrell Davis, but they were darn good because their scheme up front with Stinky Schlereth and some of those guys, they had a fantastic zone-blocking scheme.
Yeah.
But they weren't the equivalent of Terrell Davis. So he's gaining steam. Boselli's going to have to wait, guys. Jason Taylor, who's got a lot of numbers, has got better numbers than Simeon Rice for all you Simeon Rice guys out there. Taylor's got better numbers than Simeon. He's not going to get in this year, but he's not a candidate to be sneezed at because in the years upcoming, he's going to get in.
All right. You know, Ira, I'm proud to present here on your podcast such great juice of the Hall of Fame. And we're going to give a taste of this, Lee, you and I. We're going to be touching on this Hall of Fame all the way up to the vote. There's a lot of intricacies and nuances here that you'll be able to share with us. And this is great stuff. Where else is anybody going to get this?
It's the whole month of January. Steve, I'm in John Lynch mode already. I'm reaching out to people for good quotes from people. I got one, the Buck staff helped me get something from Barry Sanders last year, which was phenomenal. It knocked people over. I think it really helped Lynch make the top 10 last year. And, Steve, for the John Lynch fans out there, and there's so many of them, I will say this. When you make the cut from 15 to 10, which is the first cut on that day before the Super Bowl, and Lynch had never made that cut before. He always got chopped down.
Right.
And last year, he made the jump from 15 to 10, and he didn't make the 10 to 5. But when you make it into the top 10, like Dungy did 2 years ago, that puts you on the Hall of Fame doorstep. And my job's to kick him across this year, and I'm pretty confident it'll happen.
It's interesting, Ira. It's interesting stuff. I can't wait to get more into it. All right, now let's get back to the Buccaneers. Of course, your podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, gaining in popularity all the time.
You're 9-7 Buccaneers, Steven.
You're 9-7 Buccaneers with winning head coach Dirk Cutter. Cutter talked this week, Ira, about possibly giving up play calling duties. He didn't shoot it down. He entertained the notion of possibly killing play calling for himself. Now, I think that's fascinating. Do you believe him?
I got four words for you, Steven. And it's not the words that Joe Bucks fans listeners want me to say to you, but I got four words for you. Much ado about nothing. I don't believe it.
I don't believe it.
I don't
either.
Believe it.
You know, I'm glad. You know, we don't prepare these podcasts.
I don't believe it.
We don't have production meetings.
It's something you throw out there. It sounds good. It's tantalizing. In the end, I think that's what he does best. And why give it up?
Well, for those who didn't see it, Cutter was asked about assessing his role as head coach. He didn't just come out and say, "Hey, I'm thinking about giving
what
up play
call."
What
could he do differently?
Right. Yeah. So he was pushed on a little bit, and he had acknowledged, "We got a couple of guys on the staff who I believe could call plays, and maybe I will cut that back. I'd like more time."
He also acknowledged that the offense, Steve, took a step back by the numbers, 3 points less. That's a winning margin.
Well,
right
yeah, he didn't even have to acknowledge that. We could all see it, but. On the play calling front, he said, you know, guys like Mike McCarthy and others have given up
Andy
play
Reed.
Call. Andy Reid, who is a very close friend of Dirk
yes,
Cutter's, very close friend.
Sean Payton,
they've given up. Well, Payton didn't. Payton just missed a year. I don't know if he qualified.
Right,
that was,
right.
You know. But anyway, they gave up play calling duties, but took it back. And Cutter said, if I do change, I want it to be permanent. To me, I thought, I agree with you. 100% BS. There's no way that this guy is going to stop calling
about
plays.
The Glazers, I don't want him to stop.
Look at this. I got my little note.
Look
Glazers.
At you.
Look at this.
Why was Cutter hired?
We got
buddy?
One. We
why
got
why
one
was break. He hired?
Well, that was what I was going to say. Do you think the Glazers step in and say, look, Dirk, don't overthink this, man. You're the play caller with John Gruden.
We got confidence
John
in you.
Gruden did it. It took us to a Super Bowl. You can do this. Get some other assistants if you need them.
Let's get some better pieces for you to coach up.
You know, if you want some time management assistance, we can maybe get you a special advisor.
Look, well, wait a minute. We don't need another special advisor. Cutter didn't listen to the first guy, which he joked about. You know, I think he's still embarrassed about
and
that.
You're talking
bit.
About his time management coach.
In the Rams game, yeah.
I don't think he's embarrassed by it, but maybe we'll get the real story on that one day.
He must have really thought he had a play that was going to work spectacularly.
But that's good, Ira. The play-calling stuff.
You and I are in agreement, Isbitz?
The custodian of Canton thinks it's a pile of BS, and fantastic. All right, now, Ira, let's shift over to replacing Mike Smith, who by the time this podcast is heard Thursday morning, he could be gone. He supposedly was interviewing in
San Diego.
Jacksonville today, I believe, on Wednesday. Today's Wednesday. And then maybe they don't let him out the door because he's supposed to go to San Diego.
Right.
So if he goes, Ira, I know you've lobbied for Gus Bradley on this podcast. But Dirk Cutter did say, quote, the Bucs defense had a coming of age this season. That was it. And he talked about leadership in all phases, all levels of, you know, defensive backs, linebackers, defensive line. And he talked about how he wants to keep the defense as close to the Mike Smith defense as possible. That screams to me inside hire. But what do you think?
I think two factors favor an inside hire. One, continuity. And two, Steve, this was Cutter's handpicked staff. He didn't inherit Lovie Smith's staff. He picked these guys, the Jay Hayes's and the rest. And I think he might feel that he owes it to one of them. And they did a good job as Smith's assistants. You know, what's it going to mean to a Duffner or a Hayes if they're passed up for Gus Bradley and bringing in a guy? Now, I think Bradley's a good defensive coordinator. But I think based on what Cutter has implied. I think your instincts are right. I'm surprised your instincts are right, but I believe they are.
Thank you.
I believe he would lean to an inside hire.
Yeah, I think I know people on the surface talk about Jay Hayes. I think Duffner, who was a defensive coordinator with the Bengals early part of this century, Ira, what makes that very interesting is Dick LeBeau was the Bengals head coach. And I think a lot of Bucks fans might, if you want to read between the lines, maybe if Duffner comes in here having worked under Dick LeBeau, maybe he's more of a blitzer than Mike Smith was.
LeBeau's
maybe,
known to be aggressive.
Yes, and maybe he has a little bit of that Dick LeBeau in him and sees the magic of Levante David when he is a blitzer.
I can just see Levante David chomping at the bit.
Exactly, and think about the investment that the Bucks have at linebacker. You've got a Levante David. You've got a Kwan, who they're probably going to pay next year some serious money. I don't think it hurts to have a guy like Duffner with that linebacking experience.
I don't think it's a slam dunk that Mike Smith's getting a job, Steve.
I don't think so either.
I don't think it's a slam dunk.
I'd put it, though, I think it's, I'd say 75% shot he gets hired somewhere. Look, you know him personally. We know him. The guy's going to interview like a million-dollar champion.
He's got the best resume out there, Steve.
Best resume. He hits all the marks. It took over a mess of a franchise.
A mess.
No problem.
The Michael Vick, people forget what he inherited.
Complete mess. Inherited a brand new rookie quarterback out of college. No problem. As a defensive head coach, he groomed a young quarterback. Great relationship.
And until they started drafting terribly, he had the Falcons as an NFC power. Steve?
He won out of the gate. I think they were 11-5 their first year.
Yeah, he won out of the gate, yes.
Multiple defensive coordinators. He even played the CEO role, giving up power to his defensive coordinators. He did it with multiple offensive coordinators. I mean, I don't see what don't you like about Mike Smith unless you want a different kind of image.
You know what I think hurt Mike Smith in Atlanta besides poor drafting? And by the way, they made a nice rebound this year because I think the Falcons had a nice offseason. But, Steve, I think what hurt is, as a head coach, he was torn in so many directions, a la Dirk Cutter, Steve, that he didn't get to spend enough time with his defense. And I think he ceded some authority to his defensive coaches, and I don't think they did a good job for him those last few years, because the Falcon defense really fell apart.
Yeah, and he, I'm a bit of a Falcons follower. His time management was terrible late in his career with Atlanta, and his offensive line was brutal, which, of course, was not really on him. When you're bringing in Jeremy Trueblood off the street to play right tackle, you wonder why you're a swinging gate. But that'll be fun to watch. Ira, let me head over to Kwon Alexander. Obviously, tremendous year. Led the NFL in solo tackles. Nobody since Brooks had done that. And Brooks did it a few times with the Bucs. Hardy Nickerson was the last Buccaneer to do that. That's really rare air. And, you know, anybody who thought Kwon might have been a flash in the pan in his rookie year, PED suspension, all that's out the window. I think this guy is the leader of the Buccaneers defense. He is the captain. He is the top dog.
Boy, are you going to make me agree with you one more time, Izbits, on this podcast?
Yeah, you don't have to.
Going forward, that's not going to happen again for the rest of this podcast. But I'll say this. You're right. By the numbers, he was outstanding. And I'm going to go beyond the numbers with Kwon Alexander. He plays with the energy and the passion that I wish would reach out to 10 other defensive starters. He ran around that field last Sunday like it was a playoff game. And as Jason Light told me after the game, and I think I was the only guy to talk to Light post-game after he went in the locker room, we had some guys out there that were treating this like a playoff game, and it showed. And I think he was talking about Kwon Alexander, number one. And always Winston. You know, there's never a question about Winston's passion. But the energy that Alexander brings is very infectious, Steve. And with all due respect to Gerald McCoy, he just doesn't have that personality, Steve. Kwon Alexander is the Jameis Winston of this defense in terms of exuberance, enthusiasm, and you're right, going forward, the kid's only going to get better. Yeah, he makes mistakes, and the Buck rushing defense, let's not give him a pass, Steve, wasn't very good this year. Wasn't nearly good enough. And Kwon Alexander, as the middle linebacker, has got to take his lumps along with the other guys about that. There's no question about it. It wasn't good enough.
No, it wasn't what it's been in past. I don't know if part of that was scheme. They didn't get, I thought Clinton McDonald, if we're going to the rush defense here, Clinton McDonald didn't have the year that they needed from him. Akeem Spence, for a guy in his contract year, didn't look like, hey, this guy can start anywhere kind of thing.
Guy's out of position, poor tackling, Steve, all year long.
You know, losing airs for a chunk of games, hurt. Will Golston, monster against the run. And Lavonte David, we know that he was just sort of not himself for a lot of this year. Part of that run defense, Ira, I'm going to say, maybe part of it was just the switch to a new, brand new defense. That could be part of it. But I just don't think, I think they really lost out at the nose tackle position this year, didn't get.
Maybe it was the emphasis on upgrading the pass defense, Steve. And to be fair, the pass defense was significantly better this year. So maybe scheme-wise, you got to give something up, more resources towards pass defense. Steve, their third down defense was spectacular.
Best in the league.
I mean, what a jump.
Best in the league. Now, of course, that's one of those interesting stats that, you know, yes, best in the league, best percentage. You know, and what that means is, for the folks who are wondering if we're just pulling crap out of thin air.
33% or something like that.
Well,
know?
It means on when the Bucs defense had was facing third down, they forced fourth down at a better rate than anybody else. Fourth down forcing, which is you know, what else can you ask them to do? Except part of that you wonder was that because teams were bet, and does that magnify how good teams were against the Bucs on first and second down? Because the Bucs still let up a chunk, tons of yardage.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It is surprising, Steve, because their rush defense was so pedestrian. You would think that there'd be a lot of third and twos rather than third and sevens. Look, I'm not going to sneeze at a 33% rate.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
You know, that's a big jump. Quarterbacks didn't complete 71% of their passes like last year's
figure.
And Brent Grimes gets a lot of the credit for that, Steve. What a season for Brent Grimes. Outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not quibbling. We're just talking it out. You know, every defensive coach you've ever come across, Ira, in your 67 years covering the NFL.
Last week was 57, but that's all right. And I'm not worried about Hargrave,
no,
Steve.
Every coach says the same thing. Get off the field on third down. The Bucs did that better than any other team in the league. Now, of course, Ira, Lee, we didn't kill him off. I just realized that people wondering, why isn't...
He's at a loss for words.
Why isn't... Lee had to head out to an appointment, so he's not at a loss for words. He's actually not here. So we didn't kill him. We didn't cut his mic. Just to clarify.
Is he got an appointment with Brian Glazer? You know, fans want to know these things.
Could be. I don't know. Maybe he's tweeting that he sees him in an animated conversation.
Good one.
Your podcast, of course, I'm talking to you, I'm visiting EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com, and I'm looking at pre-owned vehicles. I'm looking at 2017s, 2016s.
The deals don't stop with the first of the year, Steve.
70 years of Ed Morris, family owned and operated. In today's times, you think about that, that's extraordinary. Very big family of dealerships with tremendous reputation. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon.com as well, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. And those are your two Cadillac dealers in Hillsborough County, Ira. There are no others.
I've been to both, Steve. Tremendous selection, great customer service. Steve, they'll work with you. They don't care what your situation is. They can be in as bad shape as you and DeKemper. They'll work with you. And as you have said, you're very familiar with them because, personally speaking, you've dealt with their vehicles.
Yeah, three vehicles. I have to say, Ira, one of my goals this year, and you know I'm a very goal-oriented guy for the podcast. We're always trying to raise your game a little bit, you know. And
you're trying to reach a million hits a week. I understand.
One of my goals, Ira, is to finally, and the listeners are going to love this, for 2017, I may fall short, but one of my goals is to put you in a Cadillac.
And if that happens, I will drive down Dale Mabry.
keep your clothes on, Captain.
I will keep my clothes on. And we will broadcast this parade route to our listeners, and you and DeKemper will be in the car. And we'll honk our way down Dale Mabry, and it'll be spectacular.
All right, Ira. Switching to the offensive side of the ball. One nugget that's – I know you love nuggets, statistical nuggets, and what they really mean, not just their stat value. Ali Marpet, Donovan Smith, both guys played every single snap this year. Donovan Smith did it for the second year in a row. How significant is that to their how this team views them – and what they are as players.
I think it's kind of remarkable, Steve. Now, I believe it's the second year in a row for Smith.
It is.
And at the left tackle position, that's incredible durability, Steve, which equals reliability. Now, some people don't like Donovan Smith. I think he's pretty good. You know, he's not a pro bowler. He's not an all-pro. He's not Donald Penn. He's not Tyron Smith. But he's not bad. And I think he's only going to get better. Ali Marpet, I think, is the stud up front. I do, at right guard. He's not going to make the all-pro team. I didn't vote for him at right guard. I voted for Zach Martin, and those Cowboy guys are tremendous. But he's coming on, Steve. Ali Marpet, I love everything about him. I love his competitiveness. I love his confidence. He doesn't take a backseat to anybody. He doesn't care who's across from him. He thinks he's going to win that battle. He's got to get better, Steve, like every young offensive lineman. But I would be surprised if Ali Marpet finishes his career, Steve, without a Pro Bowl nomination or maybe more. I think he's that good.
Yeah, there's chatter and speculation about him maybe possibly becoming a center at some point. Do you buy any of that?
I'd be reluctant to move him, Steve. Now, do they need an upgrade at center? I'm not going to argue that point. Look what Alex Mack did for the Falcons.
Sure, and we've talked about it.
Max Unger in New Orleans plays a critical role because Breeze doesn't like guys in their face. The Falcons had the number one scoring offense in this league. While Matt Ryan and Shanahan get a lot of the credit, don't underestimate the impact of an upgraded center. So, the offensive line can be better. Their run blocking wasn't good enough, Steve. Not by a long shot this year.
No, and I do think that Dirk Koetter, in many different ways, though, Ira, and yes, the run blocking wasn't what it should have been. I think a lot of that comes down to center. I'm going to share some stuff with you on that. And in the next podcast, we'll get a little more in-depth on Joe Hawley in the center position. But I'll say this, Ira. You watched Dirk Koetter since this season is over. Doesn't it feel to you like he has done everything he possibly could to say our running backs didn't have the juice this year, even when Doug Martin was there?
I think he has. That tells me that some of these running backs are not going to be back next year, at least one of them. And we haven't talked about Doug Martin in depth, Steve. I'm going to go on record right now. I don't think we'll see him. I don't think we'll see him.
I'd be shocked.
They can walk away without penalty, Steve, and I think that's the thing that's going to kill Doug Martin's chances with the Bucs. I don't think they feel they can rely on him, Steve, and the fact that they're not obligated to him, I think, is ultimately going to doom Doug Martin. So, I think Koetter feels a little more free talking about the travails of the running back position, whereas he's not quite sure how many new offensive linemen he's going to have.
And I think a nuance that's important here, Ira, that's hard to write about, but we can talk it out a little bit with Doug Martin. He was available against the Saints. Even though the suspension was looming, he wasn't suspended yet. He made the trip with the team on the plane. He was there.
He stood on the sidelines.
That game against the Saints does not count against his suspension.
Biggest game of the year.
Biggest game of the year. He was available and did not play. That's all anybody should need to know. Now, maybe Dirk Koetter, had it in his mind, well, you're going to get suspended, so I won't play you. But the NFL doesn't work that way. Jobs were on the line. Playoffs were on the line. He was available. They didn't play him. That says all you need to know.
Excellent point, Steve. And in retrospect, a game that would have turned out with a victory would have the Bucs in the playoffs, even if they would have lost to Carolina in the finale.
Exactly.
Now, Koetter didn't know that, but he knew the importance of the Saints.
It was all right there.
And he didn't play him. Was I stunned that Jacquizz Rodgers was going to get his touches against New Orleans? No. You and I weren't surprised. But to take the extra step, Steve, of deactivating a healthy Doug Martin, healthy in quote marks, and not play him, I think told you all you need to know about Koetter's feelings about Doug Martin.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And Jason Light and the Glazers. You don't make a decision like that without running it up the flagpole.
Yeah, I know you ran that. You ran that up our flagpole here on the podcast before, which is a fascinating thought.
This is not, your sixth linebacker.
And I think that ties back to what we said about Dirk Koetter and the play calling. I think, honestly, the Glazers, just like you said, I'm shocked that we were on the same wavelength.
We're going to rectify this on future podcasts. We are not going to be on the same.
Yeah, absolutely not. They would tell him, Dirk, don't lose your mind. Half the reason we hired you, buddy, is to call the plays. You've called three offenses in the NFL as a play caller to the top 10 finishes in the NFL. There's only a few guys in the history of the league who've done that. Come on.
And, Steve, you know, one point we haven't mentioned, which I think is the biggest point going forward. And once again, you're gonna be on my page on this, Isbits, unless you go out of your way to disagree.
I'm not sure about that.
All right, let me throw it out there. Steve, listening to Dirk Koetter on Monday, in a very animated, and I'll use that word again, 27-minute back and forth with the media, which was highlighted by a shut-up to Roy Cummings, who was sitting in the front row. Steve, my biggest takeaway, one way or another, and this is not going to surprise any of our listeners, one way or another, there's going to be a new number two receiver in town. We don't know his name yet, but we know one thing. He's going to be the guy that can take a 10-yard pass and make it and break it for 30 or 40 yards. And whoever that guy is, and affordable and available, that's the guy that's going to be in Tampa. He might not be 6'5", but he's going to be a breakaway threat, and that's going to make everybody around him better, and it's going to make Dirk Koetter's play-calling abilities a lot better.
And that's your no-brainer of the week presented by Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa.
And Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. With that.
No, that's a no-brainer. You know, it's
And is that guy going to come as a free agent or as a rookie, Steve?
Well, look, we've said this before, and it's nice to think about, but you have to go get him. You can't rely with a 19th overall pick that you're going to find this breakaway type guy that you want. That's some serious gambling by the GM, but this GM has done his share of gambling. Jason Light backfired on Aguayo, but he's had a lot of success. You look, I gave him a grade of B+. I don't know if you read my piece the other day, Ira. You're shaking your head. You didn't read it?
I gave him an A-. I gave him an A-.
Light, one thing that I think is a neat little nugget, Ira. What general manager goes out, I don't even know if this has even happened, goes out and signs 30-year-old plus, three 30-year-old plus defensive starters, and they all pan out on a defense that succeeded later, much later, and gelled.
Stunning. Steve, that tells me that the Glazers weren't just all talk when they said that Jason Light was going to be empowered. That's what it tells me.
Oh, he's got
because, look, Steve, you know the history of the Bucks as well as I do. Of course, I was following in 76, and you were in, you know, doing paint by numbers in grade school. But the recent history of the Bucks, Steve, in free agency is if you're 30 years old, they're not interested. They're just not interested. And that wasn't the case this year. And as you said, they've had positive results. And that tells me that Jason Light's in charge.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk a lot about Jason Light's power in future podcasts. Hope everybody had fun today. Again, the Ira's bringing the juice all winter, spring, and summer long. We'll also have some special guests. The podcast, there's always a chance, Ira, we might even expand. I got some expansion plans for you.
Steve, the whole month of January, besides a lot of Buck chatter, I'm in John Lynch mode. I'm going to tell a lot of stories about what goes on in that room, the personalities in that room.
Can't wait.
How one microphone's always in front of Peter King. I don't want to make Peter King the focal point, but I will give you some insights into what goes on over there.
Hey, it's not me. It's our fantastic Bucks fans across the globe tuning in. All right, Ira, thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.